This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, an effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally, and it's so effective it works for 9 in 10 people. The Zona Plus is a high-tech smart device that guides you through a patented therapy that's personalized to your unique physiology. To find out more, go to tryzona.com or call toll-free 888-408-6141. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, you can get $50 off and free shipping. Just use the coupon code Hoffman at checkout at tryzona.com.
Welcome to Layla Weighs In. This is a weekly podcast that I give here on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast Network. This is Layla Mutin. I'm the nutritionist at the Hoffman Center. I work with Dr. Hoffman on a daily basis. We see patients all day long, and we discuss cases, and you're familiar already with Dr. Hoffman's podcasts, as well as the weekly podcast that I do with him, which is a Q&A with me. And I have here my own podcast that I'm calling Layla Weighs In. That's apropos, right? I thank you for sending me your questions, your comments. If you're interested in learning more about any health topics, health and nutrition topics, or even if you have a question that is controversial in health and nutrition, I'd love to give you my take on it. So email me. radioprogram@AOL.com. You can email me at radioprogram@AOL.com. So, I want to talk to you about exercise. In a recent newsletter, I talked about locus of control. What is killing us and what we can do about it. Depending on your locus of control, whether you believe it is internal, meaning you have more control over your health, fate, and destiny, or you have an external locus of control saying, oh, whatever will be, que sera, sera, I have no control over it because these are my genes and this is my family history and oh, what good will changing my diet do, and throw your hands up in the air and you're a half glass half full kind of person. That's an external locus of control. You will not fare as well. We have to believe that we have much more control than actually we've been led to believe. So what I want to talk to you today about, what is in our control? One of the things that is within our control is lifestyle. And I'm speaking particularly about exercise. I will talk more about diet later, but you know, I talk about diet every week. So let's talk about exercise. And you know, exercise needs to be a prescription amongst all of us healthcare practitioners. You know, as a nutritionist, I'm always giving out a diet prescription or practicing medical nutrition therapy, prescribing a patient a therapeutic diet for their particular medical condition or for their particular objective, which may be to control, get better control of their blood pressure or their lipid profile or their blood sugar or weight control, or to help get an autoimmune condition into remission. I prescribe therapeutic diets. It's called medical nutrition therapy. Us qualified nutritionists, registered dietitian nutritionists, we are also called medical nutrition therapists. For all intents and purposes, we are. Because we prescribe diets, we should also be prescribing exercise. And let me tell you why. Exercise is an important part of the equation. And boosting exercise, according to this article, boosting exercise capacity may prolong life. Improving maximal exercise capacity over time may prolong life, suggests a new study. People who started with low exercise capacity but were able to improve to intermediate or high fitness levels reduced their risk of death during this study by roughly 40%. Wow, 40%, that's nearly half. Maximal exercise capacity is our ability to do work. Work is a push and pull. This is what I remember from high school physics. Our maximal exercise capacity is our ability to do work. It is dependent on the health of our heart, lungs, blood, and muscles. This is really what it's about. But more importantly, higher exercise capacity means an individual is able to complete activities of daily living, like working around the house more easily and with less fatigue than someone with lower exercise capacity. That means being able to climb the stairs to the second floor of your house to access the bedrooms without huffing and puffing and being winded or feeling fatigued by the time you get up there. So, while there is a lot of data to support the relationship between fitness and outcomes like premature death, there are only a few studies that have evaluated whether changes in fitness are related to outcomes, and none included women. You know, we find that this is true with a lot of previous scientific research. And I brought this example up in the past. I never forget watching on 60 Minutes a few years ago that research on the sleep aid Ambien was done primarily on men, and that the prescribing dosages for Ambien were based on these studies on men. But what they found out later is that the dosages should be different for women. I believe the conclusion was the dosage should be half of what is prescribed for men. Now, that's a little bit scary because that's a pharmaceutical. Women with sleep problems have likely been over-medicated with Ambien. Anyway, so this is an example of so much scientific research is not, women are not included in so much of it, but men are. So to address this gap, researchers analyzed data from the Henry Ford Exercise Testing, the FIT Project, which involved adults from Detroit, Michigan, who underwent physician-ordered exercise stress tests on treadmills between 1991 and 2009. And reported February 6th in the Mayo Clinic proceedings, the study team looked at more than 10,000 patients who performed two exercise stress tests at least 1 year apart. Okay? After an average follow-up of 8.5 years, they followed these people for 8.5 years. 9.5% of men and 7.5% of women had died. Compared to women who maintain low fitness levels at both tests, the women who improve from low fitness levels on the first test to intermediate or high fitness levels on the second test were 37% less likely to have died. That is significant, people. Men who improved from low fitness levels at baseline to intermediate or high fitness levels were about 44% less likely to have died compared to men who hadn't moved out of the low fitness category. Okay? Again, these are 10,000 patients who performed two exercise stress tests at least 1 year apart. So those who improved their fitness by the second test had a 37% chance less likely to have died in women and 44% less likely to have died for men. Wow. So having low fitness is an important risk factor for premature death, and improving fitness is important to health. These are things within our control. How much exercise we do. How much exercise we schedule into our days. To improve fitness, people need to increase their current level of physical activity. How do we do this? Through regular exercise, a running program, a walking program. Aging, healthy aging in general, is not a passive process. We need to be active about it, say the researchers. So we have to make plans and decisions in our lives and follow through on that. Internal locus of control, people. And what researchers see from this, they conclude it really does make a difference. Having said this, it's very important that people with pre-existing health conditions like diabetes, hypertension, high cholesterol, or obesity be evaluated by their physician before they get involved in any intense aerobic exercise program. You've got to make sure that you're safe for exercise, say researchers. Anyone with other complex health issues should be checked out to make sure they're safe for exercise. That being said, and for those people who are perhaps younger, who don't have those risk factors, again, it's a matter of getting up and doing something. So, if you have a pre-existing health condition and you were never an exerciser in your life, you don't go from 0 to 60 as you would in a sports coupe vehicle, right? You want to start slow. Start walking. Have a visit with your doctor. Get yourself checked out. But if you are an on-again, off-again exerciser, you don't really have any health conditions, start. But again, start gently on a walking program and increase from there. There are more reasons to start an exercise program. It may evade depression. A study finds exercise promotes prevention, especially in people predisposed to the disease. We know that treatment for depression can be challenging, and it's not about writing a prescription for an antidepressant. So, there is growing evidence that simple lifestyle measures can deflect depression. These appear to include exercise, diets rich in seafood source omega-3s, fatty acids, things like that, maybe even a daily cup of coffee, which can get your adrenals to challenge up a little bit, take you out of any kind of fatigue. Well, there are two recent evidence reviews that seem to confirm that exercise can help prevent depression from developing. And a recent clinical study suggests that people with certain genetic profiles may get the most benefit from preventing depression via exercise. An earlier Canadian review detected preventive potential in exercise. 4 years ago, researchers from University of Toronto reviewed the evidence on exercise and depression. And their review was the first to look for evidence that exercise might help depression later in life, as opposed to treating existing depression. So your exercise today may stave off your depression of tomorrow. And after reviewing more than 26 years of research, these Toronto scientists found that even modest levels of physical improvement, including walking, was found helpful. We need a prevention strategy now more than ever, said these Canadian researchers. Our health system is taxed. We need to shift focus and look for ways to fend off depression from the start. So, this review shows promising evidence that the impact of being active goes far beyond the physical. Good cardiovascular health helps to deter depression. We're talking about aerobic exercise. An evidence review published last December delved more deeply into a key question. We know that exercise can help alleviate depression, but can it actually help prevent depression? So, this review was conducted by researchers from the US, the UK, and from around the world. And the authors narrowed their search to studies that measured participants' cardiovascular fitness, as opposed to relying on the volunteers' claims about their levels of exercise and fitness. So not just giving them a questionnaire and saying, how much did you exercise last week or throughout last year? But they actually measured the participants' cardiovascular and respiratory fitness. And this is a much better method for measuring. And in addition, they selected only studies that evaluated the participants' mental health and mood at the outset, at the end, and at least 1 year beyond the study period. And even after applying these strict research quality standards, the studies that met the author's criteria, included more than a million participants, which lent weight to the evidence. The conclusions of this evidence review were both encouraging and actionable. Among women and men alike, they found good cardio respiratory fitness was linked to a much lower risk for depression. Conversely, poor respiratory fitness was linked to a far greater, far higher risk for developing depression. Participants in the various studies who fell into the bottom third for cardiorespiratory fitness were 75% more likely to be diagnosed with depression. That's 75% more likely to have depression compared with people who fell into the top third for cardiorespiratory fitness. All right. And genetic markers linked to depression risk, they found that exercise is beneficial. There is growing evidence that the depression preventive effects of exercise partially depend on a person's genetic makeup. A research team from University of Florida found that exercise seems to do more to prevent depression in people who possess certain undesirable genetic traits. And it looks at these same genetic markers found linked to a higher risk for depression also predict who might benefit the most from exercise as a preventive measure. So men in the study who carried two specific genes showed the greatest mental health benefit in response to exercise. Wow. And one of these genes controls a brain chemical that's critical to growth of connections among brain cells, neurons, called brain-derived neurotrophic factor, or BDNF. I've heard Dr. Perlmutter, the rock star neurologist in Naples, Florida, talk a lot about BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor. It is increased by aerobic exercise. It is increased by levels of the omega-3 fatty acids in your diet. It is also increased on a low-carb, higher-fat diet. BDNF is like the miracle grow for your brain. And it helps with the connection amongst neurons. This brain chemical, BDNF, is critical to the growth of the connections amongst neurons. And two nutrients found in seafood, some omega-3s and some vitamin D, but not a whole lot of vitamin D, because you know, you'd have to eat wild Alaskan salmon twice a day to get at least 1,200 milligrams of D, helped to raise serotonin levels. Male participants in the study who had a genetic predisposition to depression gained the greatest benefits from exercise. Benefits often equal to those that someone with similar symptoms could expect to receive from conventional drug therapy. Did you hear that? That's why we need to have an exercise prescription. Because they found that these participants, male participants in particular, who had the genetic predisposition to depression, gained the most benefit from exercise and benefits equal to someone who received conventional drug therapy. So, no more excuses. We have to hit the stairs. Everyone knows the health benefits that come from physical activity. But the biggest excuses are, I just don't have enough time in my day. And the second biggest excuse is, there's no gym near me. But researchers have put both of these excuses to the test. A study at McMaster University conducted two separate protocols with female participants divided into two groups. All the women were healthy, but admittedly not active. Each group was asked to exercise in short 10-minute sessions three times a week for a period of 6 weeks, and each session included a warm-up and a cool-down. In the first experiment, one group was asked to climb stairs aggressively in 20-second intervals, while the second group was asked to simply ride an exercise bike for the same length of time. Results showed that the short 20-minute bursts of stair climbing were more effective than the exercise bike. What they compared it to, and what we've seen in previous scientific literature, is these high-intensity interval training, HIIT. These interval training, these burst workouts, are more effective than just simply getting on an exercise bike or a treadmill and doing steady pace cardio. In the second experiment, the women were asked to climb stairs for 60-second intervals. As in the first experiment, participants showed an increase in respiratory fitness. So, according to this, excuses for not exercising have gone out the window. Short 10-minute intense periods of stair climbing will improve cardiovascular and respiratory health, which all leads to great benefits. So, short 10-minute bursts. Interval training offers a really convenient way to fit exercise into your life rather than having to structure your life around exercise. And this could be the exercise prescription. Start climbing up those stairs in short bursts. Do it for 10 minutes. Do it in 60-second bursts. And then rest for a period of 60 seconds in between. Do this for 10 minutes. No more excuses. I want to thank you for joining me on another edition of Layla Weighs In on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This is Layla Mutin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.